what I had planned to do was to have the gambler heard early on, and then have Francis come along as a kind of antidote to it, because I think she creates such a spell of magic and wonder in this place that it would overcome anything to which you had even the slightest objection. I'm told by the people in the balcony that they can still play that song. Do you want to hear it? All right. We'll listen.
I'm not going to be fooled again, surely.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns of staring out the window at the darkness till boredom overtook us. And he began to speak. He said, "Son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces, knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind my saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice." So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, "If you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done." Every gambler knows that the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw away, knowing what to keep. 'Cause every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser, and the best that you can hope for is to die in your sleep. And when he finished speaking, he turned back toward the window, crushed out a cigarette, faded off to sleep. And somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. But in his final words, I found an ace that I could keep. You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. Be time enough to count when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold 'em,
when to hold 'em,
know when to fold
'em,
know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough to count when the deal is done."
Strange things happen on the last Sunday in August, just before the church year really gets underway. Truth arrives sometimes in very unfamiliar dress. And it's obvious this morning that we're looking for it in a place that may not be strange for country music fans, but is certainly unconventional on a Sunday morning in an upper middle class church. I explained last week, by way of warning, that this sermon grew out of a dare. Seven of us, four adults and three children, traveled to Maine and back in a large RV blessed with state stereo and six speakers. And there were stretches of monotonous highway when we were grateful for the variety of tapes we had brought along, from country to lovely piano solos to classic. One of them, as it turned out, was The Gambler, to which we all sang along vigorously as we rolled down the interstate. I made an offhanded comment once about what the words implied and how one could probably even make a sermon from them, and I was immediately challenged to do it. Intoxicated by the freedom of the highway and unwilling to back away, I finally made a promise. And after all, I thought, if Jesus could take his text from wildflowers, from a woman losing a penny in her house, from some girls who showed up late at a wedding reception, from the story of a mugging on a country road, there's no reason why he wouldn't use a novel, a film, a TV series, even a country and western song if he were teaching in the 20th century. So here is The Gambler as a kind of parable of human life, not a sermon that captures the full complexity of the gospel, but one which is very much in agreement with books of the Bible like Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. Books full of practical advice about how to get along in the world. Books written by men who would have understood very well what Kenny Rogers had to say and would have approved of it. On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, the ballad singer says, I met up with a gambler. And already he strikes a sympathetic note. Most of us have felt, once in a while at least, that we were on a train bound for nowhere, hardly sure of where we've been, much less of where we're going. To meet up with a gambler is not particularly surprising. There is no one alive who is not a gambler. We gamble when we choose one job over another, when we start the engine of our car to drive to work, when we make an investment, when we save money in a bank. Forgive me, Charles, but that too is a gamble. When we invest our time and our emotions in a friendship. And it is a simple fact that some of us know how to do these things better than others. So we relate to a song in which a young man, not very skillful yet, meets up with an older man who is full of the wisdom of the world and willing for a price to pass some of it along. After the two have stared out the windows at the darkness until they are bored, the older man begins to speak. He says, Son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces, knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind my saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice. I have heard fathers tell their children, you had better learn to read people if you plan to play out your game to live your life in public. And I have read those recent descriptions of body language and how to interpret it. So I understand the way this conversation opens. We all sit around a high-stakes table, and all of us have been fooled and damaged sometimes because we were not able to read faces. It might make a better college course than basket weaving or underwater ballet. How to Read Faces, 101. How did Jesus call his disciples from among fishermen and tax agents and political fanatics except by reading faces? There's no hint that he had long talks with them or that he gave them a personality test. He looked at them with keen eyes. So this accomplished old gambler says, I can read faces by the way people hold their eyes, and I can tell you one thing. You are clearly out of aces. Your luck has run out. You need some help. And he offers to give that help in exchange for a couple of the staple comforts of his life. And when he has enjoyed them, he leans back and begins to fulfill his part of the bargain. If you're going to play the game, boy, you got to learn to play it right. Now, his psychology as a teacher is sound enough. First, you make sure that the student is aware of need, and then you fill it. You're down on your luck. You aren't winning. You need somebody to tell you how to do better. I find very few adults, and no college students at all anymore, who have read Lord Chesterfield's letters to his son. And I think that's a pity. They are elegant, sophisticated pieces of advice about how to get on in the world, how to sit at the table in the game of life and win. They are no different, except in tone, from this ballad. The English nobleman is saying, if you're going to play the game, son, you got to learn to play it right. There are rules, stratagems, aces in the hole, and he reveals them to his son in some of the most useful and certainly some of the most graceful letters that have ever been written. Just as our old gambler does now. In the most memorable part of the ballad, a chorus three times repeated. You've got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run. The most elementary advice one can get, I suppose. Know when to hold them. Know when to stick it out. Stay in the game. Press on. Keep playing. A general says, we have only begun to fight. A man says, I will save this marriage, come hell or high water. A woman says, I will not throw in the cards until I have won this battle. We talk about luck. And there is luck in life, the luck of the draw, pure accident. But there is art also, the same combination you find in a card game, luck and skill. So know when to stay and know when to get out, know when to buy and when to sell. Know when to press ahead, know when to retreat. Some of the artistry is in knowing when to step back. And you have all met people who never learned to do that. And when it is time to step back, then you need to know whether to walk or to run. You walk away from some situations in no hurry at all. You are in control and in no imminent danger. But there is also a moment when you run, when you waste no time, because you are about to be in big trouble. You're part of the stock market scene, a broker, a trader. You make a lot of money already, but somebody calls or comes to see you with a chance to profit immensely from insider trading. Illegal, yes, but not much chance of being caught, he tells you. Are you tempted? Time to run. We have a cheap new version of cocaine. You can't believe how it will make you feel. Time to run. Tempted to tell some self-serving lie that wrecks a life? Run. Tempted to pass on ugly gossip for no good reason at all except to inflate yourself? Run. And then that odd little paragraph, you never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. At the poker table, on the literal level of this song, it's simply a kind of unwritten code that players tend to follow. It's bad form to ask somebody, how much have you won? And right in the middle of the game. How much have you lost? The superstition is that if you start to feel good too soon about your winnings, Lady Luck may turn against you and they may be gone forever. There'll be time enough for counting, for summing up, when the game is over. Now, every great literature in the world has said, never sum up your life too soon. Count no man happy until the game is over. And there's no time at all left for reversals. All the great tragedies, after all, begin with someone at life's gaming table loaded with money. Translation, abundantly blessed, wearing a crown, governing a people, leading an army in defense of a country, loved, respected, famous, and then in a whirlwind of events, the wheel of fortune turns, and the favored one falls all that dreadful distance from top to bottom, from king to beggar, from hero to undesirable alien. I hear the words from a Greek play, Antigone. Proud men who speak great words come in the end to despair and learn wisdom in sorrow when it is too late. No premature boasting. The gods get jealous. And I hear the words of the chorus in another Greek play, Oedipus. This is the king who solved the famous riddle and towered up, most powerful of men. No mortal eyes but looked on him with envy. Yet in the end, ruin swept over him. Let every man in mankind's frailty consider his last day, and let none presume on his good fortune until he find life at his death a memory without pain. No summing up before the game is over. I will never deny you, master, boasted Peter, the fisherman, counting the money of his loyalty. But the game wasn't over yet, and before it was, his hand turned sour, and he did the very thing he said he wouldn't. Make no early judgments on your life, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows, the old man says, that the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw away and knowing what to keep. Because every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser. And the best that you can hope for is to die in your sleep. Knowing what to throw away. What kind of baggage do you carry? A load of guilt that you don't know what to do with? A pocket full of fears from an unlucky childhood? Hatred? Burning an ulcer in some secret place? Part of the game is getting rid of the stuff you can't afford to carry if you hope to win. And knowing what to keep. How much innocence? This is a very serious question. How much innocence do you preserve in a world of tricksters before you lose it all? Because if you lose it all, you lose something lovely beyond price. How much honesty do you keep? How much honesty in a world that tempts you to be dishonest every single day and will in certain ways put you at a disadvantage if you don't surrender? How much integrity in a world that says, slip a card into your sleeve and have it for the next hand? Nobody will notice. So what do you want? What do you keep at all costs? And then next is the truism that every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser, which could mean, I suppose, that your life, the cards you draw, will be better than somebody's, poorer than somebody else's. You're not as smart as your friend, but you're better looking. And looks open doors and win games too. You're not as talented as another, but you have incredible discipline and endurance in your life. You hold a losing hand, a winning hand, both at the same time, both in the same life. And every one of us does. Last night, I saw a tall, handsome youngster who wants to play quarterback, the glamour position. He told me he was already backup quarterback. His dad later, when we were alone, said he won't be a quarterback. He isn't going to get to play quarterback at all. The coach has told me that he is simply not quick enough. He'll be in the line if he makes it. Good looks, no speed. Win some, lose some. Every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser. And with some quiet, practical cynicism, the old pro says, and the best that you can hope for is to die in your sleep. The kind of forlorn hope, perhaps, but we do fear protracted suffering. And the fear of death is our oldest fear, so we hear how a friend has died after much pain, and we say, haven't you said this to someone lightly because the shadow hasn't fallen on you yet? Well, when I cash in my chips, I want it to be quick and easy. I'd like to just go to sleep and not wake up. And who wouldn't? And when he'd finished speaking, the old man turned back towards the window, crushed out his cigarette, and faded off to sleep. And somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. But in his final words, I found an ace that I could keep. And the ace, of course, the advantage is the advice of the triple chorus. You got to know when to hold them. You got to know when to fold them. Know when to walk away. Know when to run. And what does it mean that somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even? I'm not sure. I suppose only that in the impartiality and oblivion of death, everything comes out even. In the end, wins, losses, canceling each other out, no longer important. I said the advice in this song is sensible, practical. I was very careful not to say it is Christian, because that faith demands more and promises more. In the song, you play the game, do the best you can, take care of yourself, and if you're lucky, you die in your sleep. Tough, courageous, asking no quarter. But not a word about how you ought to feel about another player at the table. Not a word about mercy or justice or compassion. Not a word about the times when grace, unearned, freely given, enters a shattered life to heal and redeem it. It was appropriate for Francis to sing Amazing Grace just before I began this sermon, because that's the dimension we miss in the ballad. And ladies and gentlemen, it won't seem much of a loss so long as the kids are healthy and happy and your marriage is strong and good and your job is secure. When all the cards are falling right and you draw successfully to an inside straight and a three-card flush. But when these things happen, when the doctor comes out looking grave and says, I'm sorry, or the phone rings late at night about the accident, there will enter into life something the ballad, with all its charm and gusto, does not provide for. And for that reason, there is a place like this.